Thank you. A general question about press freedoms in the Americas. How fragile do you think are the press freedoms in the democracies in the Americas right now? And do you feel that in any sense the pendulum toward autocracy is swinging back in the direction of more control over the press?
Yes, one of the problems that press freedoms in the hemisphere is facing today are perhaps not unfamiliar to you. They have to do with the fact that through democratic processes, there can be methods by which freedom of the press can be enslaved and challenged. We are seeing the rise of press laws. We have threats of new press laws that could be restrictive in Brazil, in Chile, in Colombia. We have rising protectionism threatening the flow of raw materials to newspapers in countries like Argentina. And we have, of course, that tremendous problem of violence because of drugs. So the challenge for freedom of the press in our continent certainly has changed from the days which the governments openly questioned the wisdom of allowing a free press to that of more subtle forms of controlling it through a democratic system.
On that topic, we have the news this week, of course, in Guatemala and the stories in today's newspaper about outright censorship that's taking place there. I thought I would ask what you would advise the American press and perhaps the American government to respond to the kind of action that's occurred in Guatemala this week. It's similar things have occurred in other Latin American countries recently, and do you think the U.S. should take a more active role in responding directly to the use of censorship and political change in Latin America?
Yes. There are many, many examples of how the U.S. press can help. Right here in this audience, there's a gentleman I greatly admire who's sitting here in the table almost to the end, Mr. Jim McClatchy. And he has been organizing events, visits, and missions to different places in this hemisphere which are being somehow threatened by governments or by any other sources of pressure. The Inter-American Press Association is constantly organizing missions to visit on-site with renowned journalists from throughout the hemisphere and to really make an inventory of the problems that are faced. We have a mission going to Guatemala. There will be a mission to Colombia, one to Venezuela. There's one to Mexico next week. And certainly, through the Inter-American Press Association, you could participate and be of great help to those that are in need. And certainly the other element that is very important is that somehow coverage of these problems take place in the U.S. press.
A question about the American media, its perception of news in Latin America, first of all. What kind of a job do you think we do covering Latin America? And also the perception among the American press of the press in Latin America. Do you think that it's accurate?
I would say that the coverage has improved tremendously. There was a time, and you must understand that all my sympathies are with the journalists that are sent to Mexico, for example, to cover stories. You know, Mexico and many other Latin American countries, you will find that truth is never pure. It's always difficult to explain and almost impossible to demonstrate. So coming into a country and really trying to get at the roots of the problems is quite a challenge. I think today there is much improvement taking place. There's a lot more networking taking place. There are more and more communications are being made available two journalists and two newspapers that can communicate amongst each other. So I think the tendency is for a great improvement.
As I said at the opening, the United States, it seems, is on the verge of a very important decision about integrating itself greater with Mexico and the rest of Latin America. And as you've noted, this is a decision that could go either way. What about the integration of the corporate integration of the media companies in Latin America? Do you foresee anything such as that occurring?
Yes, I think one of the positive things about the information revolution is that there are common denominators springing up throughout Latin America. And there was a time when, for a Venezuelan to understand the point of view of a Colombian, you had to go through London or New York. But an important development is the advent of the PC computer and the advent of liberalized telecommunications. It was a surprise some years ago when I first wrote a column for the Wall Street Journal that once I had done the article in my small computer, I was trying to get it transmitted to the main offices. And after they put me in contact with the wire room, we could not communicate to this giant mainframe. And the man that operated the wire room said, look, I have a PC in my home. Over lunch, I'm going to go get it, and perhaps you can transmit it to my PC. And that afternoon, we had done this and gotten the file transferred. And it occurred to me that here is a 100-year-old company and a 70-year-old company that are in the communications business, and they cannot communicate with one another. But today, we're seeing that change. There are plans to integrate many newspapers of Latin America so that there can be a flow of communication and a learning process to go with it.
In your speech, you mentioned the fact that newspapers were not a transferable asset and thus were somewhat isolated from the NAFTA process, and that many other of assets in Mexico were non-transferable. But there has been some foreign interest in media companies in Mexico. I think Spanish newspaper is considering starting a new newspaper there. Canadians are investing in the newspaper industry. Do you think that there is a future of foreign investment in Mexico's newspaper industry?
I think there will always be room for an investment process, but I do not think that there would be any competitive advantage to a foreign institution operating in a local climate and in a local culture. I think Mexico has undergone a very positive opening process, but I do not believe that our culture will change so quickly to the point that necessarily a foreign company that invests in media has a better way of covering domestic issues. Now, I just want to underscore that the fact that this is even being a consideration is important, because years ago, foreign investment was expressly prohibited, and now there is a process of fomenting it. So I see more strategic alliances than I see direct foreign investment.
You referred to the control of newsprint in Mexico in the past in under different regimes, but can you speak a little about the less overt control that the Mexican government has exerted over the media? We've read about it in the United States in stipends paid to reporters, and we've also read of President Salinas trying to cut back on these procedures. How important is this right now to the way the press covers the government in Mexico?
I think it is very important to understand that after many decades of this mix of politics and journalism, many deformations have taken place. Only a few weeks ago, or months, I would say, ago, I got a call over the weekend from Bill Williamson, the executive director of the Inter-American Press Association. And he said, Alejandro, I am worried about what is happening in Mexico. I'm reading a story here on the AP Wire that is really troublesome. And I said, well, Bill, what is it? And so we went on to read a story about a group of journalists in southern Mexico, in the states of Campeche, Chiapas, and Quintana Roo, and that these journalists had organized a march to Mexico City that was called the March from the South to the Center in Defense of Freedom. And one of the journalists that was in this march, as he arrived in Mexico City, he made a list of grievances and took him to the Human Rights Commission. And in this list, he clearly spelled out that his life was in danger and that should anything happen to him, it would be the fault of the governor of his state, Mr. Borges. Hours after he delivered this list of grievances, the man was assassinated. So I told Bill, well, this is really worrisome, so we should organize a mission immediately to travel to the south of Mexico and find out exactly what is happening. So fortunately, through many friends in U.S. media of the caliber of David Asman at the Wall Street Journal, of Mr. Gerardo Lopez of La Opinión Los Angeles, Edward Seaton of Seaton Newspaper, publisher of the Miami Herald, David, and about nine journalists renowned from Mexico, the U.S., traveled to southern Mexico to conduct a series of hearings. And it was very impressive to see a publisher stand up before a podium and with very clear words, very sincere arguments, and I would say even eloquence. He would even show you proofs of photographs of when the police came in the building to take the printing press away, copies of the legal documents and the court cases that were brought against him to impede his work, he said. Documents that showed the economic boycott that was used against him, the witnesses that were there. And sure enough, you hear these accounts and you are really troubled. But I asked the man, could you please answer a few more questions? What else was this printing press doing besides publishing your magazine? He said, well, we were printing electoral ballot boxes, ballots. I said, okay. You mentioned that there was an economic boycott. Now, of the 15 pages of advertising that you carry, how many of them are the sum of political parties, municipal governments, state governments, federal governments? He said, of the 15, 13. Okay. And I said, how do you sell advertising? Do you have an advertising staff, or how does it get sold? And he said, no, well, you must understand that here it's a small company, and everyone is forced to do every job. Oh, so your reporters sell the advertising. He said, yes. And I asked him, how is the advertising rates fixed? How do you determine them? He said, well, I just meet my cost. And I said, technically, juridically, who does that printing press belong to? He said, well, the state government. We have an agreement to lease it from them. And it's really impressive to see how these alliances have turned into treasons. This love has turned into hate, and these arguments turn up into bullets that kill people. And that has become a counterproductive force in our society, one that does no justice to our industry, to the government, to our readers, or to anyone. So after many years of this mix, we are, I hope, finally taking some steps, such as the ones that took place when they liberalized the raw materials, that will eventually get us on the road to having each institution, the press and the government, have its own noble mission, but not get the two of them confused.
Just to give some equal time here, I'm wondering, as a consumer of American news, news written by newspapers in the United States, what concerns do you have about the U.S. press and, if I could say so, its relationship with the government?
Well, I guess the first thing that comes to my mind is how easily it is to write out of context, and how it can be the case that on important issues such as NAFTA, we simply go for the easy material, the three jobs that are going to be lost in Chinook, Texas, because of the textile industry, or how we can focus on only a small piece of the total argument and make great writing, but very poor service to our readers because of the context not being in place. And I believe that there are many complaints, and we hear them every year, about what is happening in U.S. Information industry. I know about the legal problems, the court decisions, and some of the many things that worry you. And I applaud your unending efforts to improve freedom of speech in the U.S. But nevertheless, today, the U.S. information industry is one of the biggest assets that this country has. I think that as a society, you have made many quality decisions, and that is because you have had quality information.
You've touched on this already today, but I wonder if you might expand on your view of the political implications of the NAFTA being defeated in the United States, for both Mexico and the United States.
A friend of mine today and I were commenting that after so many years of having this animosity and poor relations between the U.S. and Mexico, and after only a very few years of really making our countries come together so that our ways of life, our economic systems, our ways of government come at least in a tendency for more togetherness, that because of the possible not signing of a NAFTA treatment, we're going to go back in history many years. I worry that we will have again another round of anti-American sentiment, of populism, of demagogy, and of going down a road that has been very, very painful for those of us that have had to go through it.
What is the level of opposition in Mexico to the free trade agreement, and are Americans getting an accurate view of that level of opposition?
I would say that the average consumer in Mexico feels that the instant the free trade agreement is going to be signed, all of a sudden he's going to find the stores stocked up with first world merchandise at bargain pricing, and there is this euphoria that things will overnight change and become somehow an overnight success. And I worry that this view of the consumer is widely optimistic. But nevertheless, I think even if it does not happen short term, it will happen eventually, and it will create a win-win situation.
We've here in the United States experienced something that's experienced very often in Latin America, the impact of narco-terrorism on the press, and of course I refer to the murder up in New York City of a journalist that was crusading against the Medellin cartel. Can you comment about the impact that the drugs is having on the press in Latin America and how we perceive it here in the United States?
(Clears Recently, the Attorney General of Mexico disclosed something that to me is quite worrisome, that there is a growing influence of the narcotics industry in media. And he said that he would shortly have information with respect to journalists that were linked with drugs. And just this next week, the mission that is going to Mexico has offered to visit our Attorney General to learn more about these details, because to us journalists, having a rotten apple in the industry is something that warrants our attention, and we would like for these people to be identified. It is an area of great concern. I think you will find that none of us enjoy having to consider such things as our building being bombed because we run a critical story, or that the lives of our executives or family could be jeopardized. And I think that today we are seeing at the Attorney General office in Mexico a genuine fight to stop these criminals.
Back on the NAFTA, politics aside, do you believe that the NAFTA will improve the standard of living of the average Mexican?
I have great concerns about that, because you must realize that of the three factors of production, land, labor, and capital, two of them are clearly more expensive in Mexico than they are in the U.S. A square meter of land is more expensive in Monterrey, Mexico, than it is in San Antonio, in Ciudad Juarez, and in El Paso. And certainly capital is triple or quadruple in net terms what it is in the U.S. So Mexico, in my view today, does not have any competitive advantage other than guaranteeing a long-term commitment to the values of a market system.
There's been a lot of speculation about El Norte's partnership or possible partnership with the Wall Street Journal. I'm wondering if you could comment a little bit more on that and whether that is part of the new venture you're approaching in Mexico City.
Yes, there have been discussions. And one of the areas of interest that we are seeing that will develop as a possible result of the NAFTA agreements will be the need for inter-American business information, one that will cover both sides of the flow equation, and one that we can probably have a synergistic relationship amongst information companies, and we each try to specialize in our markets, yet try to form alliances that go across the border as well as the merchandise. So this strategic alliance has been under consideration for both the print business, publishing a newspaper, and electronic media, the delivery of real-time business information services, both of which are an important component of Dow Jones Corporation. And I'm hopeful that shortly we will have an announcement to make, and one that will underscore how we can, together, in alliance, really make 2 and 2 add up to 5.
If you were asked to give President Clinton some advice about his Latin American policy, what advice would you give him?
I would say, please reread the history books. They really have a lot to say, and we can profit a lot by seeing how things were before. If you analyze what made this country great and what made other countries fail, it was precisely the idea of a federation, a political federation that was started by an Alejandro that I admire very much. His last name is Hamilton. And I think that we must raise our sights, that we are living in a historical moment, one in which we should and ought to discuss an economic federation, one that will take the ideas of the founding fathers of this republic one step further. The reason that this country is so successful and other countries failed is that they were very monolithic in nature and you cherished diversity. I think that it is very important for each member of a federation to be able to pursue his unique interests, even if they are quirky, as long as they don't compromise the interest of the federation as a whole. And I believe that we can make a parallel moment of history by making our countries come together on those issues that they have to be together, and let them each pursue their own unique culture, traditions, linguistic groups, ethnicity, whatever it is, but to have some form of basic agreement.
Before I ask the last question, I'd just like to thank Mr. Junco again for visiting us today and present him with our usual tokens of appreciation, the National Press Club mug and this certificate.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Last question. Has there ever been a scandal in Mexico concerning President Salinas's barber? Do you have any comment on that? Okay.
I do not think he has enough hair.
Thank you.